Imperial.
Margarine.
What? What is your weird spooky sound? Is it kind of a ghost sound?
It's from Abbott Costello meet Frankenstein whenever Dracula shows up.
Abbott Costello meet Frankenstein?
I was going right for Dracula.
Like Frankenstein with teeth?
I was going for Dracula and then Frankenstein.
Oh my god, it's Frankenstein!
They say it's Dracula's brain. That would be interesting as fuck because it'd be
don't talk about it no more. We're going to write it.
I told him an idea for a movie, didn't I? Like a mummy in the White House.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, I wanted to bring back the old 50s movies. Like you know, just like, King Otten Cotton, back from the grave.
Back from the grave.
Back in the White House.
No tomb could hold him from doing his civic duty.
But the Senate could. I think those would be funny. Frankenstein in the White House, like, democracy goon. You're bad.
That's funny.
I feel like they missed out on an opportunity with those. I think we need to see your trailers.
That's it.
There is a werewolf in
Dracula.
Yeah,
and it does have a little bit to do with government too.
Mm-hmm. And they had a debate a few years ago. And actually, I think Dan Roebuck was Frankenstein.
Oh, remember that? Yes. Yeah. I saw footage of it, yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
Okay, so hey, it's the Google Cast.
Yay!
Episode
709.
66.
What?
I think it's 66.
Really? Wow.
Number of Halloween!
That? Oh, that's funny that Lucifer's not here.
Oh, yeah, I didn't.
Lucifer's always here. If you're talking about Fulci, maybe not.
I'm a dick because I didn't get a hold of him, but I thought he was going to be in Salem. So.
Yeah.
Is he
he's not, no.
Womp.
Love you, buddy.
He would have been dead anyways. Or no, he's in Washington, wherever the fuck he is.
Yeah, wherever he is.
He got disbarred.
He's a werewolf in Washington.
He is. He's a satanic werewolf.
Yeah.
But he's not on episode number 666.
He isn't, so to hell with the devil.
Ooh.
So it is our
Striper reference on the Google Cast.
That's what our official Halloween one is. It's going to be about like
hair bands,
Christian rock bands.
I call Striper.
Look with the
I don't know anyone else really.
White line. No, it's White Cross. Sure. You can just fucking name shit like that.
Yeah. I'm sure everyone loves White Cross.
King's X.
King's X, are they?
Yeah.
Oh.
What's that?
Music.
What's it? Hear my own prison.
Creed. We can leave them out of it.
No worker. Just stay.
How's water? Yeah.
This is
hi, everyone.
Beginning to one of these ever.
I don't
want to.
It was I can't remember who the other dude was. It was another rock guy.
Mm.
Well, one of them laughed at the other one's wiener, and then
Cannibal showed up and ate him.
Cannibal showed up and ate him because someone laughed at his wiener.
Cannibal in Congress.
We're so far off the rails now.
Happy Halloween! This is part one of our two-part in-depth expose on Halloween.
Halloween.
Is it stealing your children's soul? Brought to you by Crest.
It's the Satanic Panic.
If you're new or old, we do our kind of all of October's Halloween, and this is our episode where we read our horrifying, hauntifying tales. Because I remember last year, I was almost like, oh, was the Bigfoot? No, Bigfoot we just did randomly.
Because
I remember what I did last year.
Try some Bigfoot stories.
Yeah. So now, at this time, instead of Lucifer reading tall tales, we have Glenn. So
yay!
To my left, it is Glenn.
Glenn.
To my forward, it is...
Drakenstein. Paul Canellis.
Paul Apostle.
Yep.
The greatest apostle.
That's right.
So we're going to read little creepy stories.
And he's Chris Ringler.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this dick is me. Yeah, so we'll depending on how long we take, maybe we'll talk about. I don't know if I've seen anything of interest.
I have a ton of crap. Yeah, me too.
Because I haven't really been watching anything. I've been watching TV shit. So
Halloween episodes?
No.
I watch all of them, even the shitty shows.
Like, you watch, like, we just have, like, I watched the first episode of fucking Inhumans. But, like, we watched Exorcist. I watched No End House. Like, this is the regular
thing. Right, right.
Like, Fear the Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Where they killed off Nancy. God, Nancy was my favorite character.
Nancy was awesome.
Like, I'm surprised that they killed her off, so, but whatever, yeah. I guess.
And she wore the pansy.
She did. Nancy and her twin sons. It's sad. But anyway.
I haven't watched it since like the first two episodes. So I don't know if you guys are bullshitting or not.
Room may never know. We had an epic math battle, and Glenn lost very quickly on 2 + 4, and Paul unfortunately lost on an algebra question, and I won on looks.
The math of looks.
Yeah. Look radical. So, all right, so I get to go first, though. So.
But the theme was, right, there was
yes, I forget there was a theme. I imposed a theme.
You did. So these are about haunts.
Yeah, so haunted attractions, haunted houses, haunted trails, haunted hayrides, whatever, but like a haunted attraction.
Right. I sort of stuck to it from one of them.
What?
No, it just came out that way. Okay. But it started to go one way. Well, you'll hear. Anyways, okay. Yeah.
All right, so. Very dramatic.
Whoa.
Sits in a mindful position. You are mindfulness. Okay, so I guess I'll go first, because that's how it worked out. And mine is called
Game Face.
What?
It's called Game Face.
Oh, okay.
It's trying to be creepy, like.
Good job, Orson Welles.
That's all you so. That's to get my vocals up. Or Ride the Dragon. The words didn't seem to form fast enough to stem the flow of blood. He felt it pooling under the mask and couldn't stop what came out of his mouth if he wanted to. Motherfucker! That goddamn motherfucker broke. Shut up, son. The man across from the kid told him as they stood in the dimly lit room. He was older, 30s maybe, short, hands painted with red. He was a lifer at the haunt and related to one of the women that owned it. The kid forgot the guy's name, but he was a pain in the ass by the book son of a bitch if there ever was one. Nose! Broke my fucking nose, man! Can you dig that? Can you? And he told me to shut up? Fuck you, man! Fuck you and don't call me son! The kid was losing it, careening now, losing control and heading for a steep cliff. He stepped out of position, a dark alcove where someone would be able to see. Well, where all someone would be able to see was his head, and pulled the Halloween mask he was wearing up, and blood poured out of it and down his face and the front of the black robe he wore. His nose was bent to the left, and the blood was still coming. The kid dropped the mask and pushed his hands against his nose, wiping first left with one hand, then right with the other. All it did was smear the red further up his cheeks and send more pain through his head. Pick up that mask, put it on. Get back into place. Now. The kid was looking down at his hands in the pool of blood he was suddenly standing in. The flow from his nose had slowed to a drip, but it was still coming. He looked slowly up at the man across from him and cocked his head. What? He was genuinely baffled at what the man had said. There's another group coming. Get it together. That kid punched you. It happens. Suck it up and gut it out. We have work to do. The man was whispering, but it came with a force that said he wasn't joking and to cut the shit. The kid smiled, and the man saw the kid's lip had been cut as well, and his teeth were painted red. Oh, well, fuck you, and fuck this place. You don't pay me near enough to put up with this, with some asshole punching me out. No way. I'll get a job at the sit and spin of the stupid theater. I don't need this shit. The kid turned to leave, but the man's arm shot out and grabbed him and spun him forcefully. The man was wearing a black hood and black mask underneath that hid his face. It could have been anyone under there, and for a moment, the kid got a sick feeling that this wasn't who he thought it was. He got the feeling that he didn't know who this was at all. He looked the man up and down and realized he was stockier than the kiss-ass relative and shorter. No, it had to be him. Fuck you, Casey, let me go. I'm done. Take that mask and shove it up your ass. The kid tried to turn out of the grip that had him, but it only tightened. There was a moment of silence before the man spoke again. I ain't who you think I am. Who I am, though, is the person that's telling you to put your face back on and get back into position. Or what, you dick? you going to take my birthday away? More silence, and then, no. But if you don't cut the shit and do what I say, then one of us won't go home tonight. That's what. Last call, kid. Put the mask back on. I won't tell you again. To emphasize this, the man squeezed his arm even harder, and the teen felt a jolt of pain shoot down to his fingers and up to his shoulder. He was about to let out a holler, but the man shook his head in a no as soon as he opened his mouth. And if you run, kid, if you run, you will never wish you'd learned to walk. There was something in the other man's voice that sent a chill down the kid. As soon as the man released him, he started to bend down for the mask. He had a moment where he thought, run. I'll just run as soon as I stand up. I'll run and get the hell out of here. Yeah. But as his hand grabbed the blood-soaked mask, he heard the man beside him clear his throat. Son, I want you to understand something so there's no lie between us when this shit goes south. He knelt down and his voice became a whisper. If you fuck with me, I... Just don't make me hurt you. Please. I will, but I don't want to. I will hurt you, and I will hurt you real, real bad. Now put the fucking mask back on and get back into position. Time seemed to slow to a crawl. The kid grabbed the mask and pulled it over his head as he stood up. The blood inside was sticky now, and feeling it against his skin, cold and wet and gummy, made him gag. He felt the hand on his arm again, and he looked up in time to take another punch to the nose. He fell backwards against the side of the room he and the older man were stationed in. It was a bedroom, meant to be a place where the demons summoned by the children of the home had been hiding in wait as the rest of the family searched for their missing baby. The kid was wearing a double mask painted black, but with glow-in-the-dark paint over that layer so that he would pop out of the darkness at the customers and startle them, with his partner popping up from behind to give them a secondary shock as they ran from the room. The hunt itself was pretty clever, he thought, and the story was genuinely creepy, though the twist at the end, where aliens came in as a last-second scare, was awful. It was cheap, and he hated it, but the gig was $9 an hour, and he needed the money. The money, the money, the goddamn money. And as he stepped back into the shadows of the room, he wondered how much he really needed that new guitar when put against this. He took a deep breath, hands shaking, blood flowing from his nose again, head throbbing, and a hum in his head that wasn't receding. The hum slowly disappearing, though, and in its place were the sounds of the haunt. Built inside of an old factory and employing 50 people. The awkward laughter of the guests, then their screams, the whispers of the other actors, and at the bottom of that well was his labored breathing. He couldn't stop his hands from shaking. He looked up from his feet and over at the man who was hunkered deep into the corner behind the door. Even though he couldn't see his face, he knew the man was watching him. He knew it. He closed his eyes and beneath the fear was something else. Anger, burning white hot and pushing to take control. There was no pain in the anger, no fear. There was just action. He opened his eyes and let it take him over. Suddenly the door burst open and in rushed three young women, older than the kid but younger than his youngest sister. They were closer to 20 than not, and they were all dressed in clown outfits. Clowns, of course. Everyone loved clowns. The girls pushed into the room, laughing, spinning in the dim light, running into each other and the furniture in the room as they searched for the scare actors. He missed his cue. The girls got past the spot where he was supposed to pop out, and he looked over, and the man in the corner was shaking his head at him before leaping out silently to scare the girls. They screamed and spun to run out the exit, and reflex took over for the kid. The anger was in charge now. He jumped out at them and shrieked and shook his hands, covered in real blood, at them. He started gibbering words, phrases, saying how he was going to skin them and wear them, how he'd make a beautiful dress of their skin, and that one of them could be his bride in hell, and wear it, and then he stopped speaking altogether, stopped moving even, and just became very quiet and very still, and it was like he was possessed by the anger. It was as if he had opened a door, and now that it was open, he had no desire to close it. He liked the thrum in his body it brought on. He counted in his head. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, watching the girls move slowly away as he did. The man across from him was watching him and nodding silently. The girls were quiet as well now as they slowly moved past the kid and towards the door. Good. Good. He watched them from the corner of his eye, and as soon as they got to the door and were starting to go through it into the next part of the haunt, the hallway that led down to the basement, then out, he screamed. He took the deepest breath he could and opened his mouth and let all of the pain and anger come out in a sound that made the girls run, slamming into one another and into the narrow halls of the hall, even knocking into the actors in there as they moved as fast as they were able. And he didn't hurt anymore. And he wasn't scared anymore. He felt great. He had tasted something new and he wanted more. The man walked over to him and placed a hand on his shoulder. You did good, kid. Real good. I knew you had it in you. Just needed some inspiration. Some direction. Some motivation. Now's when the things get fun. Once you realize that in here, tonight, with a mask on, you are a god. You control what happens to these shits. You control what nightmares haunt them tonight and after. And well, son, that's a powerful thing. Addicting thing. I started off just like you a long time ago. And now, well, now I do this on the side. Freelancing, you could say. Lending my expertise before moving on. Who I am outside, every other day of the year with my false face on, that has nothing to do with who I am in here. Who I really am. The face I rarely show. My true face. It comes out here. And who you are becoming, right now, right this fucking instant, well, son, that's like finding out the world's round when all along you thought it was flat. Now, then, back into place. We got work to do. Someone will tip one of the managers off eventually, and then we'll have to hot-foot it out. But until then, we got work to do. We got to remind these fuckers how dangerous Halloween really is. The man reached around and grabbed something from his waistband and showed it to the kid. It was a mean-looking knife, not long but jagged and sharp. Man gripped it tighter and stepped back into the spot, and the kid got back into the corner again. He poked his tongue out of his mouth and licked above and below his lips and then sucked down his tongue in the salty taste of his blood. There was a bang on the wall from one of the other actors to let him know the next customers were coming. He took a breath. Showtime.
That was great. I loved it.
Cool.
And it's extra funny because my son is working at a haunt right now. To save up for a guitar. So now I'm like, I should go check on him.
Hopefully nobody finds
him. That was excellent.
Cool.
Thanks. Oh, I have a crack.
Let me get a small drink here. Alright, so I know we had our thing that we were doing. This one kind of went awry, and I sort of had to go where it went. So I'll save the actual haunt one for later. This is called When Summer Goes to Rest. We waited the excruciating wait and watched the crawling clock. First it was morning, and then morning, and still morning. And when lunchtime finally came to pass, we rushed to the school cafeteria with visions of the autumn night awaiting. We sat to plan, Sarek and Gil and me, our attack on the neighborhood's prize, the All Hallows reward for ambitious would-be goblins. Because one night a year, just one, and you can don the identity you always wanted, or at least the one your mother could afford, and they let you free. Free into the night with the intoxicating smell of fallen leaves enveloping your senses, the sounds of screams and trick-or-treat and high-pitched laughs serenading you under the orange glow of the Halloween moon. So gathering to plan as we did seemed to be the only reasonable route. One night condenses into a mere few hours, and the later you start, the less treasure to show. The sting of summer's end is relieved by October's dawn, and the thought of pillowcases of candy wafting that combined uncommon scent through the early chilly nights is the first glimmer of a lighthouse until the frost of winter solstice brings the apparition of Father Christmas. Never, we used to say, underestimate the power of Halloween night, that one annual precious marriage of frost and fright. We ravaged the tater tots and consumed the chocolate milk while mapping out our new system for covering the most all-hallowed ground. The green beans sat untouched on the trays. I like green beans, but you can't eat green beans on Halloween. It's bad luck, said Gil, and I have a feeling he thought the same for the other 364 days. I drew a line through the makeshift neighborhood paper and X marked the spot where we would wind up before the wind called us home, happy, fat on sugar, and satisfied with our returns, and still full of the macabre of an organic spooky dusk. What's this, boys, a map? Mr. Margot peered over his glasses at our sprawling paper, a small smile creasing the corner of his mouth. Yes, sir, I smiled. We start here in Hadley and wind up at the corner store. Well, we may have to run home and dump pillowcases in between, Gil chimed in. Mr. Margot nodded, lifting an eyebrow. Why the corner store? My sister works there, Sarek nearly yelled, and she's given us a bottle of pop and a bag of chips when we're all done trick-or-treating. Mr. Margot grinned from ear to ear. Well, he said loudly, nice to see men with a plan. Halloween night? Gotta be the best night of the year, right? Christmas? Well, Christmas is the best day, but there's no other night like Halloween, is there? He trailed off with that question, a faraway look in his eyes. He didn't expect an answer. It was posed as a question, but given as fact. Good luck, gentlemen. Hope you find your pillowcases full. Save me a candy bar or two for tomorrow, will you? We all shook our heads yes, smiling and wide-eyed with anticipation. He turned to walk away, and we went back to marking our trail, but he stopped after a step or two. "However," he said, a chill in the word. He turned toward us again and looked down even more closely. "Remember this one thing. Don't look behind you tonight." Gil laughed, but it was a nervous laugh, and Sarek and I exchanged furrowed brows. "Why?" "Wait, you don't know this? Your parents have set you free on All Hallows' Eve all these years, and you were never told?" I shrugged. "Mr. McDunn," he said directly to me, "you never look behind you on Halloween night, because you might see someone who you ought not to see." Chills filled me. I wanted to ask what he meant, but I didn't really want to know. "What does that mean?" Gil asked, still trying to be aloof. "Just what it sounds like. On Halloween, the curtain falls, boys. And yes, there's a possibility that you might turn to see a lost great-great-grandmother, or a poor, sad soul harvested too soon. But you could also see... well..." He stood up, a big grin across his face. "Don't mind me, gentlemen. I'm just an old codger looking for a scare on Halloween. You'll be fine, I'm sure of it. But you know, there is one other thing." I was scared to ask, we all were, but far too curious and young and fascinated to stop him from answering. "Halloween doesn't really start until 6 p.m. today, when the sun starts to descend, and doesn't end until the sun sets again on November 1st. Interesting, right? That's when summer really rests. So smack dab in the middle, 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. That's when the spirits roam most freely. You boys don't dare to be out then, right?" He had to have known full well that we would be walking to the bus stop in the near dark of 6 a.m. He smiled. This time it looked crooked, and he seemed mean, and his smile held no respite. He turned quickly and walked off with a slow wave over his shoulder. We started our Halloween itinerary at 5. Some kids ran out right after school, but no. Many houses aren't ready then, and you miss out on the candy. If you want a full bounty, you must be patient. By 6:30, our map, a distantly crumbled disposable floating down a side street, we had half-full pillowcases and decided to stop for a review of our bags. One house had given the practically priceless, on Halloween, premium of 2 full-size candy bars. Sarek attempted to circle back twice to that house, claiming to be his own twin brother. "It worked," he had yelled, but I saw the woman shaking her head with a laugh. We paused only briefly, woofed down a piece of sugary delight, and resumed our pace. By 8:30, our pillowcases were full. We were the only ones out and about, as far as we could tell, and now the night, which had held an air of spooky but harmless ambiance, turned colder, as if Halloween itself was beginning its own trek to winter hibernation. We began to walk more quickly as we left the corner store with the promised gifts, none of us in a hurry to depart from the group to their own destinations. When we reached O'Brien Avenue, Gil gave us a wave and practically ran off towards his house, knowingly spilling a few small candies and pretending not to notice, darting indoors as quickly as we had started out. The charms of the night's atmosphere had now turned to only the sounds of night itself, the wind alive, murmuring insincere warnings through the trees, bringing to life its namesake chimes everywhere in the distance. We hurried, any pretense of courage for each other's sakes resigned in a flurry of chills and goose pimples. I spoke first. "Hope I got a lot of Reese's," I said, half-heartedly. Sarek agreed. "I think you did. I saw Mr. Bittering throw a bunch into our bags, so at least those, but probably more." We were silent again for a block or two until the loud crunch of a stick behind us. We froze for a moment, looked each other in the eyes, and continued walking. "Don't look," I said, in a voice barely above a whisper. It felt like a scream. Sarek winced. We took more steps. The crunching commenced behind us. We walked more quickly. Fighting the urge to look was now near impossible, the sight of my house just a block away being the only antidote. A sound like a low growl came up on our heels, and our walk fast turned into a sprint. We raced to my porch with as much passion as we had ever summoned on Halloween night. Sarek would still have to cross the street and down a few houses to get home, but as we stood on the porch and blinked and looked toward the place where our pursuant would have been, there was nothing. The safety of my porch had rendered the bite of windy moonlit nightfall to a still menacing but mostly unthreatening sensation. "Do you want me to get my mom to walk you home?" I asked. He looked around. The bravado of youth was starting to return to his eyes. "Nah, I'll be okay, Cal. See you in the morning." I nodded and watched as he stepped off the porch, his footing less steady as he hit the sidewalk. I went inside, then felt a moment of panic as I closed the door. I peered out the glass window and saw Sarek almost to his house, but my blood ran sleet cold when I saw a shrouded figure behind him, stopped on the sidewalk, watching him. I wanted to open the door and call out, but didn't, fearing that the second loss would keep Sarek from the safety inside. I decided instead to call him, but I watched with bewilderment as the swarthy personage, clouded by the darkness, evaporated into All Hallows' Eve. I shook my head, wondering if my mind had invented the whole thing. Sleep was uneasy at best. Every sound of wind and tree magnified outside my bedroom window. Each brush of branch was the hand of Sarek's stalker, waking me to see what evil had befallen him. Every bark of the neighbor's dog was a caution of his presence. In the morning we met, the three of us, and walked the crisp parade to the bus stop together. Night's shadow was still being cast across the sun. Sarek and Gil both seemed unshaken by Halloween's touch, and were unwrapping and eating candy bars from open zippers in the tops of their backpacks, already discussing things they would ask for on Christmas. As we passed the crosswalk and out into the unusually quiet main road, there was a sudden screech from just behind us. A truck veered over the sidewalk, losing control and bearing down directly at us. Gil and I reacted quickly and dove to the cement, but Sarek was too far ahead and the vehicle barreled toward him. He was stunned, too scared to move, his mouth and eyes equally agape. Just before impact, I saw it. I saw the thing. The figure. It was no less visible than the night before, but no less real. It reached both hands out and shoved Sarek back toward us, a full 5 feet away from where he stood just a second before. He landed hard, and the driver of the truck wiped his forehead, face now sheer white, looking as shocked as the rest of us. We saw it, the phantom figure, all of us. Unmoving, standing as straight as the night before on the sidewalk. A voice like I've never heard before or since vibrated in agreeable tones, a circular sound coming from everywhere and nowhere at once, and spoke only two words. Not today. With purpose, I looked down at my watch. The final seconds of 6 a.m. were ticking down. Sarek's dark preserver vanished, dissolving with a wisp into soft remnants like onyx feathers before disappearing entirely. Back into the veil.
All right, so here we go. So mine is called Your Heart Will Go Pit-a-Pat. His plan was to spend the day in bed. Not the whole day, but enough to make him feel he murdered it rightly. His walls were covered with posters of rock legends a generation ago. His television hummed blue, awaiting a command. Video? DVD? Netflix? Games? None. He wanted the blue to burn the room. His headphones whispered in his ears louder than bombs. He was content as a teenager could be. Freedom is boring when it has no responsibility attached to it. To his right were a stack of books to read on an old rickety nightstand. Half were his choice, the other half for Mr. Bingley. The spines mumbled, "Read me. Come on, try me out. Pirates of Venus, Electric Gumbo, or, If Beale Street Could Talk, A Study in Scarlet." He reached over and sighed, pushing Pirates of Venus off the top and pulling A Study in Scarlet up to his chest. This is the book he was behind in reading, not the one he wanted to read. Habits are hard to break. He always did what he was told. Easier that way. Rebelling for the sake of rebelling seemed pointless. Mr. Bingley was going to go over pages 50 through 100 tomorrow, and Felix wasn't even on page 2. Randomly, cracking the book open, he read, "I'd imagined that Sherlock Holmes would at once have hurried into the house and plunged into a study of the mystery." Bullshit, he thought. He laid the book back down and resumed getting lost in his headphones, turning them up so that they were barely loud enough to garner some attention. A buzz from the bed. His phone tells him, "Felix, you still going to the haunt tonight?" Matt's text, giving Felix his first possible plan for the day. "Sure," he texted back. "Okay, meet me and Liz at the picnic table by the parking lot." There, he had a plan. And he had something to do today. It was official. His room soon grew disappointed that he found someone else to spend time with. It was, however, content in its blue glow. Becky walked by his door and tossed in his freshly washed and dried socks, scattering the pairs apart, falling like off-whitish snow on the worn silver rug. "Hey, damn it, Becky!" Felix jolted up as his sister sped down the hall with her laundry freshly folded intact. Putting his shoes on, Felix thought about how Becky was the C-word. You know, the one that almost rhymed with haunt. His mom shouted down the hall that dinner was almost ready. Mashed potatoes was all Felix wanted. 2 hours later, Felix was full of beef brisket, mashed potatoes, and some strange health juice his mother thought the family should try, mostly carrot juice, which seemed odd because carrots seemed useless to begin with. The family ate while talking about their days. Dad talked about some computer shit he was working on down at the insurance office. Mom talked about making the dinner they were eating as they were eating it. Becky talked about doing her chores and also about Felix not doing his. And Felix grumbled about Becky, his weekend being half over, and a bit about how they didn't have to be so middle America all the time. He just wished people understood him. He knew he sounded like a Morrissey song as he was talking. God, his family was dull. Not terrible, but terribly dull. Felix scooched his chair out from the table. I'm going to meet Matt and Liz at the haunt. Save me a pixie stick or two. He pointed at the bag of candy ready for Halloween, just days away at this point. The family had a tradition of eating one or two pieces of pre-trick-or-treat sweets. It honestly had more to do with impatience than it did with tradition. Don't be out late, his father waved. His mom telling him to be nice to Liz, Felix left out the back door, grabbed his bike, and began to ride past the Halloween-decorated houses on the block, around the bend, and down the steep hill towards the west side of town. When Felix finally arrived to the haunt, his eyes fixated on the garish decorations outside. It was set up in an old arcade, something from the 70s, closed down in the 80s, abandoned since the 90s, and reopened in the fall ever since as a local haunted house. Doom Hall. Doom Hall, well, you'll have a ball. Stupidest slogan ever. The van of the brand new owners parked near the front read on its side, Doom Patrol, in orange letters on a black van with the outline of a ram skull just below the D. It was, for lack of a better description, kind of a half-heartedly, half-assed, thought-out logo on a pretty lame van. Felix leaned his bike against the picnic table, where many a hot dog and slushy were consumed back in the arcade days by guys with Boston t-shirts and mirrored sunglasses, hitting on girls with cowboy boots and cut-off jeans, once ogling each other while Sticks played by 8-Track from a Trans Am. Now, all that remained were teenagers who almost didn't care to be there. They were disinterested in being interested in anything. Matt and Liz were already sitting, one with a slushy and the other with a half-eaten hot dog, ghosting the kids 4 decades ago. Hey, about time, Rahul. Matt tossing the hot dog over his shoulder. Yeah, parents were making a big deal about dinner and my activities tonight. They got to know everything. It is frustrating. Liz just pointed towards the line. Shall we? All three joined the line and talked about the movie that was on Channel 18's Victim Video Fest last night. And then, there they were, just going into the basement like, we gotta investigate that growling. What a bunch of dumbasses. Felix smirked and mentioned that that is exactly what he would do, sarcastically. Liz laughed. Reminds me of the werewolf movie we all watched the last year. Fang of the Dark? Man, did that blow my mind. A voice from behind them. You three paying together? Huh? Matt mumbled as he pulled out a tenner. The ticket man said, okay, have a good time, as Liz and Felix both paid. Hand stamped. Okay, look, don't fuck around in there. No striking out at our crew, no pissing in the corners. No touchy the boobies of our witches. No. And I mean no fucking refunds. I'm not fucking kidding on that one. Got it? Matt tilted his head. So, touching witches' boobies is not okay. You got it, fucktard. Now get your ass in there. And don't come out looking like a pussy. Felix took Liz's hand, and Liz took Matt's. They entered the haunt. It was pitch black. Pitch black. The whole place was cold. And you really couldn't see enough to even maneuver without putting your hands in front of you to guide you along a wall. So Felix did so, letting go of Liz's hand so as not to run face first into a wall. Felix said, "God, I hope I don't mistakenly grope a witch's titty." Arching his head back, trying to toss the words back to the ticket man, right away thinking it's strange he couldn't hear Liz or Matt laugh at this cool and awesome comment. Felix followed the wall to the right again. Another turn to the right, then one more corner to the right. All pitch black, all in a circle. The next bit were stairs going up. Only about three. But Felix had to bend over, almost going up the steps on all fours. This is so fucking lame. Nothing happening yet. A scream from down the hall. A scream from the darkness. Sent his heart racing. A whisper from Felix. Fuck. He stopped for a moment, waiting and trying to refocus, to readjust, but nothing really changed. He remembered last year in the haunt, the group behind him caught up, and they were loud and pushy. They were frat guys. Felix didn't want a repeat of those assholes again. He took a deep breath and onwards. He began to see some flashing lights up ahead, so he quickened his pace. "Anyone up there? Liz?" No answer. But he could see light flashing from behind a curtain. Not really a strobe, but maybe just the still light in the moving curtain. Put out his hand and brushed through the curtain. The light flooded his eyes, making him wince. He rubbed the shock away to see he was home again. Dad in his chair, scalped and gurgling from a small puncture in his neck. Sitting next to him was a haunt worker, hair slicked back and wearing a terrible Count Dracula costume from a 1960s horror show, the kind so fake it bordered on being silly. In his hand was a screwdriver. "Your dad is glad you're home." Felix stumbled towards his dad. "Dad?" Looking back at where he was, he had tripped over his sister, lying in a pile. No, piles of body parts, all perfectly butchered and arranged on the floor, and almost looked fake, like the body parts you'd find in a Halloween outlet. His sister's severed foot, wearing a fresh sock. Felix could smell the blood mixed with the smell of autumn apples and pumpkin spice candles. This collaboration of tradition and gore. Off to the right, he saw the kitchen table not cleaned off yet from the beef roast and the potatoes they had earlier. His mother slumped in the chair, butcher knife in her back. There stood a clown in a workman's overalls. A patch on his left chest reading Bingo, and beneath that read General Manager of Doom Hall. $10 gets you fucked. Felix ran past the corny drac, heading for the back door, tears running down his face, looking for a way out, looking for some place safe to be, pushing the screen door open. Felix burst back at the front entrance of the haunt. The ticket guy, looking surprised. "No refund, pussy." 2 dozen people in line let out a chorus of laughter. Felix stumbled past them, looking at his bike, back at the entrance of the Doom Hall, back to his bike, back at Doom Hall, as reality and nightmare were fighting for supremacy inside Felix's brain. Grabbing his bike, he lifted it and began pedaling home, freaked out and in a daze. Oh my God. Mom. Dad. When the bike rounded the corner and Felix's lungs were heavy with his legs, and his legs were sore from pedaling harder than he'd ever pedaled before, he saw it halfway down the road. The black van, Doom Patrol, in orange letters, parked in his driveway. Near the back of the van, Drac threw a bag of tools in, and slammed the door shut. The clown, shutting the door on the driver's side. Felix stopped, out of breath, but most importantly, out of his senses. His shock made him plant both his feet on the ground. Jesus! The van backed out and leisurely rolled toward him. Felix saw the window roll down. His eyes widened as the driver, clown makeup, smile spreading across his face. Trick or treat, Felix. See you next year. Tossing a pixie stick out to him. It bounced off his chest, off the handlebars, and fell in front of his feet. He could hear a voice from the passenger seat say, "Now we got to go to Liz Baker's house. It is time for her hunt."
Nice.
That's great.
I love that. It reminds, for some reason, it reminds me of Funhouse.
Yeah.
I've never seen Funhouse.
Funhouse is very, it's like a less derby Rob Zombie kind of.
Yeah.
Huh.
I like how the characters were still just like, they're just dudes at a haunt. The fake tracking the costume and doing the accent. Go, "Dad, was that your home?" That's great, man.
Thanks.
So, all right, so this one's called The Bride. All right, so. He punched before he even thought twice about it. It just happened, a reaction. Something clicking in him, and in an instant, his fist shot out and returned a satisfying crunch. And, when it connected with the idiot in the mask that had jumped out in front of him. The satisfaction was short-lived, though, as he heard movement behind him and turned to see a short, stocky guy in a mask quickly move towards him. Cam smiled, shook his hand to get the sting out of it, and hurried out of the room. The room led to a long hallway with flashing lights and two more idiots in ghost sheets moving in at him. He pushed the first one into the wall, and then the second he kicked him in their junk before leaving the room and entering a makeshift basement. A family was huddled around a crib that had red light flashing within. The punchline. He picked up some of the story as he was going through the haunt, but he hadn't been paying much attention, if truth be told. He was trying to find Karen. After their fight, she had stopped answering her phone, and he knew that she must have gone out with her stupid friends. They had wanted her to come to this stupid haunt since they started overhyping it in the summer. And it was all hype. Big production with cheap thrills. The point was hammered home as four actors in alien costumes, big gray heads with shiny suits, popped into the scene after a flash of light blinded them for a moment. $30 and all you got was 15-minute walk through a dark maze with a bad joke for a story. He could have gotten this from basic cable. He went up to the closest alien and pushed him hard. They flailed, not expecting the blow, and fell into the prop boxes and then threw them in a heap. He didn't smile this time, just pushed past the other aliens and out the exit and into the world. He caught no sight of Karen or her friends. He felt a dozen things at once, and now that the anger was dissipating, the most prominent thing he felt was shame. Shit. On her birthday. He pulled the stupid, jealous boyfriend shit on her birthday. Genius move. He stormed out the exit and past the gathered group as they huddled together and told tales of their survival. The air was heavy with the scent of a nearby bonfire and donuts which were being sold in booths beside a seating area. He looked over at a couple holding hands and kissing in the line to get in, and he wondered if they knew they were doomed. That it wouldn't work out, that he'd screw it up someday. It was inevitable. Tam? He turned, a distant smile on his face, and saw Karen standing with her friends. They were clowns. "Babe, I'm an asshole. I'm so sorry." He held a hand out to her, and she returned the gesture, though her hand held a long, thin knife which slid deep into his belly. Tam took a staggering step backward, and he looked down at himself in the place where the blood was pouring out. He looked back up at Karen, hand still outstretched, and the knife dove into his side and was pulled upward. The blade was pulled free and plunged in again. Tam fell forward and Karen caught him as Carly and Dee Dee moved close to help hold him up. He opened his mouth to speak, but Karen shushed him and gave him a soft kiss on the forehead. Dee Dee looked around and then nodded to her friends, and the three of them gently laid Tam on the ground. Karen was tearful, but it had to be done. This was the pact. In the O'Leary woods, someone would find the body of Dee Dee's girlfriend someday. In a car at the end of a cul-de-sac was the body of Carly's boyfriend of 4 years. This was the pact. Taken at 12, an oath by blood to be repaid with blood when all three had entered their 17th year, and today was Karen's birthday. Today was the day. The pact was complete, and they were now the brides of darkness and would reap those benefits. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but someday. That was what the book Dee Dee had found in the woods had said, and that was how it would be. Someday. She had found the book deep in the woods, near an old door that stood silent vigil, leading to places none of them dared dream into existence. A Book of Dreams was its name, and where it came from and who had written it, they would never know. They only knew the power they had felt holding the book, and the power of the blood they had spilled on it upon making the oath, and soon their dreams would come true. Carly wiped away the tears on Karen's left cheek, and Dee Dee wiped away the tears on her right cheek, and with the knife put away, they each took a hand, and the three of them started towards the long line that led towards the haunted house. The possession, the haunt, had been hyped since July, and they had been looking forward to experiencing it since they had heard the first radio commercial. They started giggling as a masked chainsaw killer walked by, and then up ahead, fire belched from the top of the building. Slowly, the line wound forward, the snake of people being swallowed by the yawning mouth of the haunt, and the closer they got, the more anticipation grew, and in no time, it was time to face the darkness.
Yes. was the kid the guy that punched the other guy? I'm thinking it was. That was cool, man.
We can talk off.
All right.
We'll talk offline, as they say in fucking corporate-ass meetings.
Man, that was good. All right. So this was meant to go with the other story. But so it's the same three characters. But what I was thinking was, if there was a real ghost at a haunted attraction. So it's called Better Fate Than Wisdom. He stood outside, bathed in the light, a specter born, all hollow even, and birthed beneath the wispy night, an inky presence teemed with bite, a ghost no one believed in. If courage be a folly still for making a bad decision, they pressed past recommended will and trudged the long road to the hill, three minds, a gasped division. They found the door open ajar and called the would-be presence, on Halloween more near than far, to reconcile a breached memoir of spirited malfeasance. And so awakened took the night to dance again the physical, and spied upon freedoms unquiet, hovered next in newfound flight, and rendered them divisible. Scattered then three for the door with conquered cynicism, and if any of them needed more, the proof lay freshly on the floor, a better fate than wisdom.
Ah, nice.
They did well.
They peed their pants.
I love their pee. Well, cool. Do you guys want to, like I said, I don't know that I've seen anything of note.
I know you've seen a bunch of stuff.
I've seen a lot.
And I actually wrote a few things down because I figured we might talk about it.
All right. Well, I saw Kong Skull Island.
Yay!
Finally.
Like it?
I did. But I gotta tell you, you get super attached to John C. Reilly's character.
Yes.
And you kind of go, man, I just watched a movie with John C. Reilly's character.
Yeah, I loved him. I loved
it. It almost overshadowed the whole movie.
You want to see his side, like, what did he do before they got there? Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's one of those characters that it's got his hilarious quips.
Yeah.
But it's really well-rounded.
Yeah.
You feel for the guy, too.
And he's got a bit of sinister to him, too.
Yeah.
Like his face. Like he's been around.
Yeah, that was really cool. I saw Life yesterday, literally. Not just Life, like, I can see that walk out my door. But the movie about the space alien. That was pretty cool, too.
Oh!
Yeah, I saw it yesterday. Oh. And I knew you were big with it, yeah.
Like it's
really I still haven't.
I did.
It's surprising.
I put it on my queue after you said
like
that.
Like Mandy tapped out like the first big kind of set. She was like, no, this is too much. And she had to.
I can tell you that I am a big when I'm not thinking about them. I'm one of those guys who's like, whatever. Jake Gyllenhaal's not that good, but then I watch a movie and I'm like, what am I talking about?
Yeah,
and in Life, he's amazing.
I think him and his sister, right?
Yeah.
They both like that for me.
Yeah.
When you're watching them, they're excellent.
Yeah, and then like later on, you're like, yeah, they ain't that good. And then you watch another thing, like
I think it's called Soulful Eyes.
Yeah. Oh my God, he's so good in it.
And Nightcrawler was great.
Yeah. So, yeah, life was pretty amazing.
quotes out of context.
Well, I mean, the one thing I really want to mention is the one thing that I really shouldn't hear, but that ending's badass, right? I mean, I can't go into detail.
All right, I'll watch it tonight. You got me.
That ending, right?
I mean, you see Statue of Liberty, and you're like, no! You sturdy ape!
So, yeah. Actually, before coming here, I started, so I can't really talk too much about it, but I will tell you, visually, it's just bonkers. Is the Christopher Gunn's Beauty and the Beast.
Is it?
Yeah.
I'm curious. It looks, yeah,
I want to see it too.
I started it.
In my queue.
For a guy that has only made like less than 10 movies, although he's had a career for almost 50 years, because he only makes a movie like every 5 or 8 years,
so this is amazing. Yeah.
I want to see it.
It's just,
it looks great. Every clip I've seen from it. It made me
watch. It's one of those movies, like, I can't talk too much about it because I'm not sure how good it is yet, to tell you the truth, because I'm only literally 30 minutes in. But as eye candy,
how do they do that? No one talks like this. No.
There's none of that.
None of that.
But it's just the way he shoots things.
Yeah.
The guy's got an amazing eye for camera work.
That's awesome. Yeah, I want to see it.
It. So far, it's holding up to, like, Brother of the Wolf and stuff like that.
He does like a 12 movie thing for Halloween, every Halloween. You liked what was the number one movie?
Shin Godzilla.
Yeah.
I've never seen that.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it either.
I was incredibly impressed.
See, when I saw how much you liked it, made me want to watch it even more.
Well, I mean, you might not like it because it's really about, this is one of those movies where Godzilla is just happening.
Right.
And the movie's really about the people.
Yeah, but I like that. I like the Godzilla remake.
So I think this would really
annoy. Not 1998.
I think this would really annoy a lot of people because it's much less about Godzilla than it is about, holy shit, how do we stop Godzilla?
Right.
You know, a lot of government bureaucracy type stuff and whatnot. But I mean, it's just so well made.
Mm. I haven't heard nothing but good stuff about it.
Have you? Okay.
That's except for good. A few people that were whining about.
Right.
So me.
You didn't see it?
No, but you see, it looks like shit. So.
Oh, okay.
I mean, everybody says that. So they have kept it real under wraps. Then, if that's not what he looks like, then I'm impressed that they've kept it under wraps. His hair looks. I hate versions of Godzilla where he literally has like a 14-mile long tail. I'm just like, that seems real. Imbalanced.
Like the Jeepers Creepers train out of the truck that went for like a mile and a half, and then they're like 10 feet away.
Well, there's. I will say that there's something that happens at the end, the tail end of the movie, wink, wink, that I'm not even sure I 100% understand. Like, there's this point where I watched it, and then I started to try to figure out what they were trying to tell me. I still can't figure it out.
Hmm.
Yeah.
He goes back in the water, Glenn.
No,
he goes back in time.
Like,
he's realizing, sort of like, the fuck?
No, that was another really good one. Shin Godzilla. I was impressed with that.
I'm going to watch that as well.
I think the one that I would really recommend to most people across the board, though, was A Cure for Wellness.
Yeah.
That was the one that I watched this year that I thought, holy shit, this is good.
I had to
it's
watch
way
it.
Way better than I thought it would be.
Yeah, I had to watch it split up because it's pretty long.
Oh, it is long.
And I was working on stuff while I was watching it.
Yeah.
So I felt like it was like halfway through and I'm like, wait, what? Yeah. I had to go back tomorrow night, start 20 minutes before and go back in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's Blade Runner 2049 long.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I've seen is that.
That was amazing. Yeah, I loved it.
It was a terrible experience, but yes. Well, I told you, like, it's, the sound is just horrible.
Oh, is it?
An IMAX, it's like, like, it's so loud, you're just like, oh, this is uncomfortable.
See, our friend Tara Lockhart knew that the sound was bad in IMAX, so she said, no, we're going to go see it regular.
Really?
I didn't know why. Yeah. And I didn't know how she knew.
It's the best.
But she said it's not
mixed
well.
It's just like Interstellar. It's they, you know, because, and it could have been the theater just fucked
That's
up.
What I'm
usually
wondering.
When they go to, when stuff goes to IMAX, they, like, a lot of the directors will have, like, explicit,
right,
like, directions, like,
right,
set the sound to this, set
right,
this and that, so I don't know, but yeah, it's, like I say, it's the best needless sequel ever. It was completely unneeded, but it's really good. It was, come on, you didn't need it.
No, but I wanted it.
What was the most needed sequel? I was just curious if there was like a...
No, like, I know. Well, the thing I was thinking
Godfather
about...
Godfather 2?
Here's what I was
said that, but no, I don't think
here's the thing I was thinking with his analogy, though, was I was thinking a woman with three boobs. Chris is right. I mean, you don't need the third one. You only have two hands, really. The third one's not really needed, but you're not... But you wouldn't complain about it.
Right.
You wouldn't be like...
You'd be okay with it.
Yeah, right? Yeah, fine.
It's the most needed sequel.
That's a good question. Well,
wait. Question.
Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, right? That's a cheat.
Yeah, but you need it.
You do, but
that was the worst 4 years of my life waiting for that shit. Like, Han is frozen for 4 years. I had, like, this small darkness following me around. I needed him to get out of there.
I almost would have said Bride.
Yeah, I was thinking that,
but
too.
But I'm like, you don't really need it, because it's a self-contained...
But you kind of do, because when it ends, it's got that universal ending.
But, I mean, but you really don't, I mean... And again, like, this is just talking, like, straight up, like, you don't need it. Like,
right.
You don't really need it.
But, yeah. I mean, any well-told story, though, maybe.
The Return of the King. You need it.
But, I mean...
That's like the same story. That's all one story. Then.
All right, fine.
Raging Bull 2.
Huh? I liked it, actually. Raging Bull 2 was really good.
Raging Bull 2.
Yeah.
Okay.
It didn't really have a lot to do with Jake LaMotta. It had more to do with the bull. An actual bull. They went in another direction.
Well,
which Robert De Niro still played.
With Joe Pesci in the back.
Yeah.
You met a door me?
Yes. A bull costume.
Bull costumes.
That's great.
We are the Raging Bulls.
I can't remember if they released it. Because you remember they were making it?
No.
I thought they shot it, they just changed
that,
the name.
That blew Raging my
Bulls
mind.
Too?
Yeah. Like, enough people are like,
dude,
no.
Are you fucking with us?
No, I swear to God.
I'm not going to believe any of this shit, because I always believe you guys for a minute. I
swear to God.
Like, Glenn's talking about Friday the 13th deleted
like,
scenes that never happened.
This looks like Honest Face Chris, though. That's
yeah,
the problem.
Yeah.
It was... Supposed to be about Jake LaMotta's life after or something, and like enough people are like, that's kind of, and they were going to shoot it in black and white. Like, they were doing that, like, they had a couple of big name actors, you know, like, falling on hard times, big name actors, but like, people were just like, that's kind of bullshit, and they're like, okay, it's not Raging Bull anymore. It's like the Bronx Bull or something. I'm like,
but the Blade Runner was fun.
No, I know, I like it. It was good.
But there's a, you know, there's a huge backlash against Blade Runner.
About
online.
Because of this new one.
No, yeah, because it came out. So
right,
and then
right.
Everyone's like, well, you know, it's not really that great of a movie.
Oh, Blade Runner.
Yeah.
I actually read a lot of those.
Right. It's
yeah.
So irritating.
Yeah.
Oh,
I went on, actually, the next day, and I wrote this whole thing on
oh,
Facebook
you?
About how, you know, if you're someone that doesn't judge the movie based on the movie itself, but based on the sequels around it.
The Bronx Bull.
He was not
then
lying.
I don't need your comments anymore.
Right. Just watch the movie.
Just watch the movie. Right. Judge from the movie.
Yeah.
Don't judge it by the movie before or after.
Yeah. Well, people were saying, literally, Blade Runner's super overrated.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Like, just everywhere.
The original.
Right.
Yeah.
That's just
the way old culture. Yeah. That's the way it goes.
That's kind of bouncy.
So, this is Jake LaMotta becomes a world-class boxing champion but lives a troubled life outside the ring. William Forsythe, Joe Mantegna, Tom Sizemore, Paul Sorvino, Natasha Henstridge, Penelope Ann Miller, Ray Weiss. So, it
wow.
Has, like, a decent cast.
When was it, what was the year that it
James
was?
James Russo,
2014.
Cloris Leachman, Robert Davi. Came out 2014?
It did come out?
Well, it's, yeah, 2014.
Huh.
Biography based on the tumultuous real life experiences. So 2016. So it was made in 2016.
It's not really a sequel, though.
It was supposed to be, yeah. Like, I mean, I'd have to.
I mean, it has no connection.
MGM files Raging Bull 2 lawsuit against Jake LaMotta in sequel.
Mm.
Oh.
Raging
weird.
Bull 2, now titled The Bronx Bull. Ba-bam. Huh. I rest my case.
Wow.
All right, so what, did you see anything else?
Yeah.
I miss the days when you would see, like, I saw something, but I can't talk
I know,
about
it's
it.
Been a while. Oh, man. Hopefully I'm getting back to that. But, well, I guess you told the Chucky?
No.
No.
Oh, I'm go watch it one day. But,
I don't know why I watched it right away. It was just something to watch that night. It was like, it could have been so cool.
It could have been a contender.
It could have been a contender. Instead of just a bum.
Which is what it is.
No, it was all right. You know, I liked the Curse of Chucky was a lot better. This one's just really silly.
I like that he changes things. He's willing to kind of change things up.
Oh, absolutely. And it's cool that he's still doing it. Don Mancini's still doing it and everything. And also, he's doing Channel Zero, yeah. Which is 150 times better than Cult of Chucky. Yeah. I was watching, I actually watched another episode of Channel Zero after Cult of Chucky, and I'm like, what? Because you could have made, Cult of Chucky could have been amazing. It was cool, though. It was all right, I guess. It was kind of funny. Silly as
shit. Honestly,
you
know, let's face it, like, most hardcore fans anymore probably like the silliness more than the hardcore. Like the,
you're right.
I think they're in it for the weirdness.
Yeah, you're right.
And that's the thing, though. You got to give him credit. Chucky has never changed personality. Like they make Freddy kind of comedian. Like,
Chucky's always been that.
Yeah, he's always been kind of.
I guess the first one's
ass.
A little more sinister, but he's still a smart ass.
But it fits his character too, though. It is the evolution of his character where he's been this for so long. He's so fucking just over it and jaded. He's just like, I don't
the
care.
Movies tonally have changed though. Mm-hmm. Well, like Seed of Chucky just.
I like Seed though.
It's dumb as hell.
But
it's entertaining,
but it's so weird.
Yeah, I think it's the funnest one they made.
It's really stupid though, right?
Sure, it's dumb.
With Glenn.
Bride of Chucky's my favorite one, but I have no emotional attachment to that series at all.
Right.
So I, you know, like a lot of people just like all of them. No matter. Well, there's Chucky, so I like.
I've heard the same argument for the Attack of the Killer Tomatoes movies, by the way.
I fucking love them.
Where I saw someone go, the second one is so dumb, and I'm going,
it's Attack
really?
Of the Killer Tomatoes.
That,
but I think that's because Child's Play is dealt with in a more serious manner.
Sure.
Like, it's stupid when you break it down, but just in that, you know, like, I like Child's Play as an actual horror movie. The rest of them are just kind of silly, funny. You know what I mean? Although a lot of people love Part 2, but whatever.
Yeah.
And I saw Gerald's Game. Did you guys?
I haven't watched it yet. I don't want to, but yeah.
I loved it. It was awesome.
Really?
I loved it.
Huh.
It was one of my favorite movies that I've seen this year. Did you see it?
No, but I was reading about, because we've done lots of Stephen King recently.
Mm-hmm.
In one way or another, we've been bringing him up on
the
show quite
right.
often. So, I was looking online, and a lot of people seem to like Bag of Bones for some reason.
Ugh. Like a movie?
Yeah, and it's like isn't it like a mini series? Like
yeah,
a big
and it's super
4-hour
soapy
sucker?
And
yeah, it's soapy. That's a great term for it.
Because I tried watching the first.
Yeah.
I tried watching the first 20 minutes.
I like how that was enough.
And it wasn't going anywhere.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, me shutting it off wasn't such a
No,
thing.
No. You're not missing much.
All right.
But Gerald's Game was just, man.
Huh.
I didn't expect it to be that good. And that was part of it, because I'm like watching, like, this. I realized I was just completely into it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like an hour in, and I'm just like, mouth open, watching, like, wow, this is really something else.
Right.
And it's Mike Flanagan again.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
You know, it came out today, it's 1922 as well.
Oh, really? That came
out. It's supposed to be good. This is another Stephen King Netflix.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. With Thomas Jane.
Man, there's like five things I want to watch tonight now. And then I saw, what was the other one? Oh, The Girl with All the Gifts.
I want to see that, but yeah.
I was going to bring it, because that was the one I wanted you to borrow.
The zombie one?
Yeah. Well, you guys haven't seen it, so I can't really talk too much about it, but it's super original.
Really?
I thought it was one of the most original zombie movies I've ever seen.
Hmm.
And everybody, the acting's great. It's a Glenn Close.
Okay.
Which is a name you don't hear a lot anymore.
Glenn Close in a zombie movie.
Yeah.
Exactly. But it's her part's really... She's not like the lead or anything.
Okay.
But her part was... she was great, of course. It's Glenn Close. You know what I mean? But
Glenn Close for comfort.
That also had an outstanding ending.
Really?
Yes. That I was just like, wow, that's great.
Yeah.
And the visuals of Gerald's game, too. Man.
Yeah, it's dawned on me lately that visuals can't be my only argument, because I made this argument recently with a movie where I said to somebody, I was like, it looks really good. And then right. I realized what the movie really was. I'm like, Glenn, you're just looking for something good to say about it, but it was The Secret Window.
Oh, no.
Pretty terrible.
I've never even seen it.
It looked good.
It starts out good, though. It kind of degrades as it goes on.
Badly, yeah.
I stayed with it because the acting's still good.
It's an airplane racing towards the ground. That's how good it is.
That's the Johnny Depp.
Yeah. Which he was good, of course. But
yeah, and it looked good. But
yeah, I wanted to like it more.
It doesn't go anywhere.
No.
And at the end, you feel like,
it's going to be hard to do. It was going to be tough.
Yeah.
And I thought that about Gerald's game. Like, they can't really shoot this and make it.
See, nowadays, I mean...
And John Turturro was actually bad in it.
He was kind of off.
I didn't find him being good at all.
You're right.
In fact, he was playing a cartoon character.
Yeah.
Where everybody else was playing you straight.
Yep. He was off.
Yeah. It was weird.
Well, did you see that miniseries with him last year? I think it was HBO. He's like a lawyer tried to get this guy off for a murder. Well, that was awesome, and he was great in that. And all his little John Turturro idiosyncrasies, they played perfect into the character, you know? I can't remember the name of it, though. So
Barton Fink 2,
that was it. Sam John Goodman.
Barton Fink means Raging Bull.
Barton Boogaloo.
Barton Ball.
That's funny, because I read somebody today.
Raging Fink.
I can't remember who it was. Kyle Hotz, maybe, the artist? On Facebook, he wanted some ideas of what he should draw to submit to Marvel and DC.
Yeah.
And he was like, but don't tell me stuff like Captain Crunch versus Machete. Because actually, he had Captain Crunch versus Danny Trejo.
Oh, did he?
Which I thought was even funnier. And I'm like, that's the only comic I want to read.
Captain Crunch is pretty short. I think Danny Trejo had him on the girth.
But Captain Crunch has, like, crew, right?
Have you seen his crew? It looks like a dog and a kid.
So you got to jump on you and stab you in the roof of your mouth.
The soggies give him trouble.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
he's going to have to go bad almost. Chucky can possess him.
They should have an evil Captain Crunch for Halloween. That's like a different, you know.
Yeah, he kind of does act different on the Halloween commercial.
I follow him on Twitter.
Slightly meaner.
He hasn't done anything in a while.
Next tomorrow, new comic coming out fighting Danny Trejo.
Oh my God. All right, so anything else exciting? My only discovery, and it's not new, but like in my listening to podcast thing, I discovered that it's called Ghost Stories of an Antiquary by Montague R. James, and it's like an old book, or an old couple of books, and it's someone reading the books, and they're great. And I think one of the stories is what Night of the Demons is based on.
Oh, wow.
Casting the Runes.
Nice.
Oh.
It's at least basically the same story.
Right.
Like, it's pretty much exactly the same. But
what was that called? I'm going to write that down.
Ghost Stories of an Antiquary. But they're super effective and super, super macabre. Because they're all, like, you're figuring he's, like, late 19th into 20th century, and they're really gruesome and like really creepy stories. And I really liked them; like, it was great.
Are they all by the same guy?
They're all from his books, from that book. Like, I think it's one or two volumes, like Ghost Stories of an Antiquary, and it's just the same guy. It's LibriVox puts them out, so basically they're in the public domain, and just there's one like one reader, and he just, you know, each episode is like him, like, and then blah blah blah. It's interesting because they're all kind of Lovecraftian in that they're all about antiquarians. So they're all kind of like these history people that are like kind of digging into shit, and they kind of find stuff that they shouldn't find.
Right.
And it's, they're very,
check this out.
Very creepy, seems like very awesome. Effective. I was like, wow. It's like, and now I say that, like, honestly, much more subtle, but very Lovecraftian. Much
like
more
that.
Subtle, but yeah, like, yeah.
I like that.
This year, one of the things that I didn't put on my list, but I still watched anyways, was the original Mummy.
Oh.
And you realize that all those old Mummy tales are literally just Brits going over there and kind of...
Colonialism.
Right, so this whole colonialism, and they're going over there. It's kind of like they're spray painting on the...
Yeah.
And they're like, ah!
Yeah.
And
it's like, no, you guys have it coming. No, we're discovering great things. And it's like, no, you don't have a fucking tomb.
Right.
Tear this door down. I want to get inside.
Right.
Like, let's see what's happening there. It's like, no, like, literally.
No, this is where my... This is where my grandfather's buried, dude.
It's... And what,
dig up your grandfather.
It is,
right.
It is funny, though,
because the curse, look how he died. That looks crazy.
The curse is, like, literally, if we all disappeared today and aliens came, they'd find, like, teenage bedrooms that say, like, stay out, jerks. The curse is, like, a plague of bees will feast upon your face. It's basically, stay out, jerks.
Stay out, jerks.
That's great. Like,
kids, teenage kids are basically mummies.
They are.
They're crusty like them.
I love that movie. I love The Mummy. But I always was bummed out that they didn't do the makeup a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because that makeup's amazing.
Yeah, no.
That original one, the mummy, if you blink, you've missed the whole mummy.
Yeah, and he looks so good.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, literally, it's like, yeah!
Oh, man.
That's a pretty creepy scene, too, for a minute.
And Carlos really good.
Oh, he's great. He's magnetic in that.
Yeah, he's great.
Like, oh, man, who would win a smoldering stare-off, Dracula or Amin ramen noodles, like the mummy.
Ooh,
guy.
Amin ramen noodles.
Amin ramen noodles. Now Dracula, because he changed his name, he's not as threatening anymore.
But seriously, just
he gives them
one another.
The scene where they have his face, he's right in the camera, and it kind of gets dark everywhere, but his eyes are still. Yeah, that's
you know.
Awesome.
Now I think I know how to stop a mummy. You get him wet. Just like Amin ramen noodles, because he's all stiff. And
he can't move.
Like, no, get him wet. And he's like,
get him wet, and they throw him in a dryer and he shrinks.
Like, I'll get you.
You're throwing him around.
And a werewolf would be too fluffy. Yeah, too static, clingy.
Oh man!
And you throw a garlic frisbee at a Dracula. At a Dracula. Hey,
throw Dracula. Throw that garlic frisbee at him.
I don't even know like that sport.
Who's making garlic frisbees?
Where
garlic frisbees?
You have a silver infused condom.
Rawr, I'm going to get some action.
Oh my god, my wiener! It hurts. The wiener
hurts. Oh, well, that's a sympathetic werewolf.
I thought you were putting on and killing the werewolf with it.
Oh.
Yes,
you
do.
Hmm. What a twist.
It is a full moon.
I'm going to pitch that to Tyler.
Oh, no. No, please don't.
The condom's name will be called Silver Bullet.
Silver Bullet 2.
And you starch up the mummy.
Yeah.
I still don't know Dracula. Oh, yeah, Dracula just threw the
garlic frisbee.
You're garlic frisbee, dude.
Basically,
it makes perfect sense. Just throw the garlic frisbee.
You know, defeat Frankenstein's monster?
Oh, it stares.
Oh!
He's like, or a ramp. He'll be like, he can't blow himself down, so he just tumbles.
I mean, that is literally, if you ever watch the really old Doctor Who's, that's how they get away from the robots, is just go up steps. They do. Because they just roll around on wheels, and like the guy runs up steps, and they're always like, ah! They like turn
away. That's pretty short-sighted decision.
You know how you get rid of those stupid like angel things?
Huh?
Mirror house.
Yeah?
Yep. It's going to work.
And with that,
I gotta order some garlic frisbees from Hungry Howie's.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So cool. So this is Halloween Part One has ended. Please see the exit and leave. Pay your tailor.
Yeah. Watch out for the guy to punch you in the face.
Yeah.
That's the comment or grabbing your witch's boobies.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You know what?
Remember witch's tit, man.
Mm-mm, none of that.
You didn't get kicked in the broom. We shall return in two-ish weeks for the conclusion of Halloween.
Garlic frisbees.
We gotta think of what the fuck we're doing with the second episode.
Yeah, we better figure something out.
Womp, womp. Okay. So we will see you soon. Scary dreams.